dedicated to all the hackers and the crackers. To the hackers and the crackers. I see in binary, I speak source code. Step on my toes, I'll post a million JPEGs of you in a fag pose. In your digital stance, getting firewalled ho. Cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll school you on burning Dreamcast. You need some ISOs? Let me through my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused the fight between Un and Jay-Z. You see, G, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones? And NASDAQ leave you flat on your back? Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. This is dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial codes, source codes, ISOs, RANs, zips, sits. Dedicated to the hackers and the crackers.
Hey there, everybody. This is Stank Dog, and you are listening to Binary Revolution Radio, episode 96. Almost to episode 100. 96, four more to go. And today is May 17th, 2005. Another Tuesday, another episode of Binary Revolution Radio. However, this week we have a treat. We have a new first-time co-host on the show. Joining us, the Roman poet himself, Virgil, is co-hosting the show with me. Virgil, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks a lot.
So, we do have quite a bit of stuff to talk about tonight. We are going to talk about Google mining, something that both Virgil and I find very interesting and has a lot of potential for discovering and finding data. And I know a lot of people, we've been getting turned on to this project lately in the forums, but we're going to go into a little bit more detail, on the show tonight of exactly what it means, because it is kind of a vague-sounding topic, Google mining. So we're going to make that our main topic later. But first, let's take care of a little housekeeping. I only have one thing to mention at the top of the show here, and that is to just thank everybody, really, for participating in Freak Factor. We had our third episode of Freak Factor, which is our new reality freaking and hacking radio show, the first and only of its kind that I'm aware of. Very, very challenging project that we have taken on, and Not Theory has done wonderful, wonderful things with. Very successful so far, and there will be some changes coming up to that. This is really a cool show because not only is it the reality of just people dialing in and participating in the conference call, but also what I like about it is that we're making everyone part of the process. We could have waited and gotten every single bug ironed out and got it working perfectly and made up a format. We decided not to do that. We decided as part of the reality of the show to deal with the bugs as it went along and deal with the adaptation and the growth and change of the program and of the show as it goes along, and dealing with the problems and involving everybody in on that process. So that's one of the things that I've liked about it. However, we are evolving every single episode, and there will be some more changes as the future draws near. So I just wanted to let people know that. I guess we'll give out some more details when we get closer on our website, freakfactor.net. That's freakfactor.net. But basically, we're going to try to cut down on 20 people all trying to talk over each other and try to cut it down to just a few people speaking. And we have several ways that we're talking about doing it. So, once again, you, the listener, and the participants will be in on that process as well. So, look forward to that next week for Freak Factor. And Virgil, unless you had some housekeeping, website maintenance, project announcements, anything like that.
Let me see. No, actually, I'm pretty good. Most of the stuff we'll probably get to.
Okay, well then, let's take care of some email. All right, we had quite a bit of email from last week's show, mostly from Black Ratchet and I are two crotchety old farts, and we sat there reminiscing, going off on these weird tangents of some old television references and movie references and things that we weren't sure if a lot of the listeners would get. And I told Black Ratchet that a lot of people would get these references. They're not as obscure. A lot of people knew that Snidely Whiplash was, in fact, from Dudley Do-Right, the old Rocky and Bullwinkle show and things like that. So,
I knew that.
Did you really?
Yeah.
See, I mean, they're not as obscure as I guess we... I thought that one was might be obscure, but Black Ratchet thought the Ghostbusters. He said a line from Ghostbusters, and I'm like, everybody knows Ghostbusters. It's not that old. So we did get a lot of email from that, so I'm not going to go into reading a bunch of those, but we do appreciate people confirming that for us. As far as our actual real emails this week, I guess... All right, I'm going to start off with an email from Amy. Amy writes in, "Greetings, Stank Dog. I have a question for you. Since you changed to VoIP, I was wondering if you might suggest some of the better companies. I am so sick of Quest, which is out there in the Midwest, or out there in the West, I should say, and the asinine fees they add on to the bill. I listened to the show where you changed, and I think I'm going to change also. They screwed up my bill, and after two calls to the so-called customer service, it is still not fixed. I am tired of the imbecile." Oh, that's a good word. Imbecile. Oh, that's a good word. I got to start working that into my vocabulary more often.
Definitely.
"Yeah, I'm tired of the imbeciles they employ to, quote, ensure my satisfaction. Sorry I am ranting. If you could share your opinions, it would be greatly appreciated. Thanks, and keep up the great work." All right, well, thank you, Amy, for imbecile. I'm going to work that in. I'm going to start putting that in. Yeah, actually, it's been quite a while now that I switched over to VoIP. And before that, people were probably really tired of my rants. And Virgil, maybe you can back me up on this one, of how much I hate Bell South. You're in Bell South territory as well.
Yes.
So I'm sure you feel my pain.
Yeah, I can definitely sympathize.
Yeah. So as soon as I had the opportunity to get off of Bell South, I jumped. And I switched to cable modem, which was finally made available in my area, and went to VoIP and haven't looked back. So I've been, all in all, I'm happy. However, I'm never completely happy. The better companies, I've only tried a couple myself, and I've heard a lot of things from other people. Bottom line is, anybody leaving one of the big bells, again, Bell South, Quest, any of the larger companies, the traditional phone companies, the baby bells that became big bells again, and we won't go into that whole thing, all this monopolistic tactics that they have of, for example, Virgil, we don't have a choice. If you want phone service, it's Bell South.
Yeah.
And you're going to pay what they charge you.
Basically.
Period. That's it. And Bell South down here, they do offer a VoIP solution, but it costs about the same price as their regular phone service. They're not competing with these other VoIP providers. So any chance to get off of the phone companies, I'm all for it. So as far as where I switched to and my recommendation, I went with VoicePulse. And I think I've mentioned that on the show before, and we're using it right now. So please, Virgil, by all means, tell me if it breaks up or anything bad. Some days it's better than others. I don't really think that I could honestly recommend them. I'm not too happy with them because they're not reliable. Some days it will be perfectly fine, no problems whatsoever. The sound quality is good. I don't miss calls. Other days I pick up the phone and I won't get a dial tone. So it's just too intermittent. I can't count on them regularly giving me the same service. So, I mean, it is okay. However, the only reason I went with VoicePulse is because VoicePulse will cooperate a little bit better with Asterisk, the PBX software. And at one time, that was one of my projects I wanted to work on. And quite frankly, long story short, I have too many things going on. I had to accept the fact that I'm not going to have time to put together my own Asterisk box. And for all the great things that Knot Theory and Natus and Nick and Black Ratchet and those guys have done with theirs, I don't need another one. We've got plenty going on. So I accepted and resigned to the fact that I'm not going to have this box. So now what I'm going to do is probably be switching soon. So it is kind of timely that you asked this question. if you are looking to tie something in with asterisk, then yes, I would still say Voice Pulse is not bad. It's pretty decent for the money that you pay. I won't compare features to all of them because, quite frankly, they're all similar. You're always going to get free long distance, unlimited long distance for like $25 a month, somewhere thereabouts. You're going to get the same services, call forwarding, voicemail, call hunting, all that kind of stuff. And that's not really the point. The biggest thing is, A, the price, they're all close together, B, the reliability. And I think when it comes to reliability, if you're not going to do it with an asterisk box, I think the short answer, the way to go, is to go with Vonage. Vonage is the largest of the companies, which doesn't necessarily mean anything, but they are large and they do have people for customer service. They've done a good job. I got my father using Vonage, and I did have to call and use their tech support. They were very helpful, I have to admit. Maybe I just got one good representative, but I had good luck with their support. We had a hardware problem that was basically a bad port on the router that they sent us. I would have sent it back, but since it's my father and he doesn't need the other port, I just switched it, so it was easy enough. But I would recommend Vonage. Now, I also, just to get another point of view, I asked Lucky225 and Doug both, who are very, very well-versed on this, and they both agreed that Vonage is definitely the way to go for reliability. For anybody who's not going to do anything hardcore with it, you just want to replace your phone and save some money on your bill and not be a slave to the big Quests and Bell South of the world, then you want to go with Vonage. There are other options if you want to tie it into Asterisk or do some other things, but Vonage and Voice Pulse are still seen to be... And whatever you do, avoid Packet 8. I was told to pass that message on. Doug says, everybody hates Packet 8, so I guess we definitely say stay away from them.
Something I will say, it's not really that related, but I was recently looking at domains lately, and I recently noticed that Quest actually owns Q.com, which actually is kind of interesting because technically, like, it's just single-letter domain names. You're not allowed to have them. Like, if you do a whois on a.com, you'll see that all the single-letter domain names have been reserved. And like in one of the RFC specifications, it explicitly says that the single-letter domains have all been reserved and you can't get them. However, there are some very small exceptions. Q.com being one of them. Another one is Z.com, which is owned by Nissan. And I've wondered for quite some time how much money Quest and Nissan paid to have to have them get this anyway. I actually recently found out. Apparently, way back in the old days, you could get single letter domain names, but no one thought of doing it. So, I don't know, okay, kind of neat. So single-letter domain names, there aren't many of them. Quest happens to have one of them.
Right, and isn't it true, I thought I read somewhere, that all the single, double, and three-letter domain names are all gone?
Oh, of course, yes. Right? I mean, if you have, like, a two-letter domain name, you can retire on that.
Really? Now, I do understand the rarity, for lack of a better word. But let's say my two-letter domain name is QL. I mean, I would have to find a company with those initials.
Quantum Leap.
I guess. Quantum Leap? Who's going to pay? I don't know. I mean, I do understand it, but I don't quite see why people are willing to pay that much for it.
People do it.
Yeah. Domain names are an interesting... That's a whole study in and of itself, because another interesting phenomenon, since we're going off on a tangent, I've found sites that I have registered before in the past, or that we have, other DDP members have registered and things, where there are companies out there that will simply buy up your used domain name, no matter what it was,
definitely.
What was it about.
No, that is very true. No. It is dangerous to even run whois queries for certain domains, because someone would say, oh, look, this person is running lots and lots of whois queries for this domain. Maybe we should buy it. And so to prevent them from having it, then we sell it back to them. But no, definitely, if you have a domain and it just expired, especially if it is a short one or if it's in .com, they will register it immediately, and then they will try and sell it back to you.
Yeah, and that usually only happens with, like, some of the shadier companies will watch your whois queries through them. Generally, right. I don't think that happens with the GoDaddies and the larger companies of the world, I'll say. But yeah, I've heard stories like that as well. But no, actually, I'm not finding it with sites like that. I'll give you a specific example. Bland Inquisitor, a DDP member, staff writer for 2600, a great guy. He had blandinquisitor.com. That's a very unique name. That is his handle. Never been seen that I've ever seen anybody use it or have it before. Well, he let the registration expire as he pulled out of the scene, and someone bought the registration. And I think, I'm only guessing here, but I think their logic is simply somebody else owned it. There must be some sort of traffic to it. I will buy it and throw ads on it for the simple fact that I know I'm going to get hits because it already existed.
That's actually a very good idea. I don't know what I was assuming the motivation was, that if someone wanted it at some point, probably someone else will want it in the future.
Right, and that's another good example of that is an old site from one of our members, BIOS, who used to run a site called digitalrights.org. And this is back in the early days when before the RIAA and MPAA started suing 12-year-olds and all that, which is a whole other tangent we won't go into. But back when that stuff was first starting and before it was really starting, he started that site up. Well, now that site, when it went public and when it was not renewed, that I understand there can be a domain of people fighting and willing to pay for it because that is a good domain name, a good site, could be used for a lot of different purposes. I can see that one. BlandInquisitor.com, the only person who would really want that would be, well, Bland Inquisitor or somebody that... you know what I mean? I guess there's a lot of different examples and a lot of different motivations, but it's definitely an interesting phenomenon, I guess.
Mm. All right, I just put up something. If you look at deleteddomains.com, they actually have a big list of domains sorted by how long they are that have just recently expired.
Yeah, and there are companies that specialize in going out there and fighting to try to get domains that have recently expired. So, it is I actually read, gosh, I wish I knew the link offhand, but I read some very interesting explanations of how that stuff works, and there's multiple companies that swoop in to buy them up, and they actually, it almost comes down to like a technological fight. They go in and they keep querying the name servers over and over, and the different registrar servers, I should say, not the name servers, the registrars, like every few minutes to see if something has been released within those few minutes. I mean, they're fighting and tripping over each other trying to grab these domain names. So it's not just one person or one company. Companies make a living doing this. So anyway, we're going way off topic there. Let's come back here to some email. So again, I would recommend Vonage. Back to answer the first email, I recommend Vonage if you want to just save some money. Otherwise, I would say go with VoicePulse if you're planning on tying it into an asterisk box. That's my advice. So our next email here, oh my goodness, help me out with this one, Virgil. I'm going to go with Reliama. Reliama?
Yeah, sounds right.
R-E-L-Y-I-M-A-H, Reliama. Who says, "Hey, Stank and Company. First of all, great show. I listen weekly from Australia. Aye, mate. And would just like to clear up a few things about the web accelerator provided by Google." Now, that, of course, was our main topic last week. You mentioned on episode 95 that the accelerator would only be good for dial-up. They say themselves at webaccelerator.google.com/support-html, that, quote, "dial-up users may not see much improvement as Web Accelerator is currently optimized to speed up web page loading for broadband connections." I do agree with you entirely, having a 1.5 DSL connection myself, that I cannot see a use for this on my connection besides becoming a spider for Google, thus rendering it entirely useless to anyone with half a brain. Also, the privacy issues mentioned about caching authenticated pages makes it even more useless to anybody who has a mind for security. Anyway, keep up the excellent shows, and I'll keep listening. P.S., the Australian accent you used when reading your email from Skullface, a good friend a few episodes ago, was absolutely hopeless, but hilarious nonetheless. I was laughing for the whole of the email section. Well, I'm glad I can amuse you, like I'm a clown. I'm here just to be a joke for you people in Australia. I'm glad that I serve that purpose for you. No, I'm just kidding, of course. I don't mind taking a few jokes myself and putting myself out there. I know my impressions are hit and miss, usually missing greatly, so that's all good. Actually, Virgil and I were talking about this before the show. I thought the Google Web Accelerator has been pulled from the site. Now, the reason, I guess, is in question. I still say that they brought this down out of public pressure because of the thing. Not that we pointed them out. A lot of people pointed this out besides us. So I don't think it's anything that we did, of course. I'm not that naive. But who didn't see this coming? A lot of people were having problems. They saw the privacy issues. I think they pulled it down because they realized they might have screwed up.
But they haven't pulled it.
But what does it say?
It says that they have lots of users now, and they are working on increasing their infrastructure so they can support more users. That is not pulling. This is whoa, big demand, must recoup a little bit.
But again, this is, I guess maybe this is my whole Google conspiracy coming back again, but I don't necessarily trust that's the real reason. That's their publicly stated reason. Maybe they pulled it, or they've said they've reached their limit. What they're actually doing is fixing the problems with it, and then they will re-release it when they've got the problems fixed and claim that their infrastructure was upgraded or whatever.
Well, people are using it right now. Like, I know people who are using Google Accelerator right now, and there's no downtime or anything. I mean, I guess it's possible that they could be revamping the service for privacy reasons, but...
Right, and they'll re-release a new one, and they'll probably make those people who are still using it upgrade. I'm not saying they've disabled it completely, but you can't download it anymore.
That's true.
Right?
Of interest, though, when the Google Toolbar was released and there were privacy considerations, they actually had on the Google Toolbar page, they said, oh, whoops, sorry about that privacy thing. We have a new privacy-enabled version that you can download now. So in the Google Toolbar, where there really was a big concern about there being lots of privacy issues, they said it pretty much up front. Now, that doesn't mean that they haven't changed now, but that's at least some track record.
Right, and that I think was related back to the PageRank system they had in there at the time.
No, the problem is with the Google Toolbar is that it knows who you are when you're visiting a page. So, for example, they can say, oh, people who visit this site also visit this other site, and stuff like that.
That's exactly what I don't want. Oh, man. That's exactly what I don't like about Google, is them doing that. And they're doing that, toolbar or not, now. They're following everything. If you're logged in, I already went over this. You know what, I probably shouldn't rehash the same topic on here, but they're tracking everything at Google, and anybody with any concern for their privacy should just be careful. I'm not going to rehash. That was a whole long conversation, and I'm not going to redo it on the show right now. But Google has a lot of scary information. I think that's the long and short of it. So let's move on to another email here. Excuse me. Next email comes from Ghostless, who says, Dear Stank Dog, after hearing all of your anti-Google rants, well, that's timely. Great, way to segue into the great. I thought I might draw your attention to a nice little site. Hopefully this site is something new to you. If it's not new to you, maybe you could draw the listener's attention to it as well. It's www.scroogle.org. That's scroogle.org. They call it a Google scraper. It is basically Google for the anti-Googlers. Wow, that sounds dirty, but I don't know why. What it does is it gives you the results of all powerful Google search engine minus the cookies, search term records, access logs, and best of all, ads. Okay, thank you, Ghostless, for the email. I trimmed a little bit off there, but there are a couple other sites that do that as well. What was the one we were talking about before?
Google-watch.org.
Right, yeah, I think I've mentioned that on the show before, Google-watch. And I went to I had never heard of Scroogle, so thank you for this. I did go check that out. It wasn't really, it didn't have anything on there new for me, quite frankly, but it does work as advertised. And it looked to me strikingly familiar, similar to Google Watch, to be quite honest. It may be the same people. I didn't have time to go into it and look, but I don't know. Maybe it's just more of my paranoia of tying all this stuff together. I don't know. But definitely,
I don't know. I can definitely sense a very anti-Google sentiment here. But I don't know. I'm actually not too worried about Google. I think the real problems with Google are, number one, that you can basically assume anything they know, the federal government can know. And not only that, anything Google knows, someone else can find out by a subpoena. But that's just the way it is living in the U.S. However, as far as Google being evil by themselves, I mean, admittedly, they do have lots of power, and you just kind of get this thought in the back of your mind. You're like, wow, you're just getting bigger and bigger, aren't you?
Right.
And you're just knowing everything. But still, like, so far, they have been completely saintly. There are some things on Google Watch and stuff like that, but no, they're funding Wikipedia. They're going to Stanford and they're digitizing libraries. And these are all, I mean, they've been a saintly company. Other things I think it's also very interesting, which makes them different from the other search engine companies, is that they have not been doing content. For example, if you look at MSN or AOL, like MSN has their MSN Encarta encyclopedia, and if you search for like some famous person, it'll say, oh, you know, get this MSN Encarta article, and we'll give you half of it, then you pay for the other half.
Right.
Now, Google does not do that. Like, they make no content, so thus, like, there's no reason for them to be biased, which I think is very important. And I even think Google knows this. Like, if you note the Google Dictionary.com link where you, like, define words,
right.
the Google, which is now Answers.com, all that information there is basically the 1911 Webster's Dictionary, full public domain. A guy at Google could do that in a month and just completely replace that. However, they have not done that, which I find very interesting. I don't know, and I think it very clearly shows that Google is trying to stay away from doing content, so that way they're never thought to be impartial.
Right. Well, and I've never said that they've done anything yet, but the potential is there, and that's all I've ever said, is that we should be careful of the potential. I said the same thing about Microsoft Passport many, many episodes ago, and the same does hold true for Google. So far, they're straddling the border. They're getting close. You've got to admit they're getting closer. I mean, they're going through your Gmail and parsing through it to send custom ads to you. But
Yeah. We're
taking their word for it that they're stopping there. I mean, let's be frank. We are trusting Google. In Google, we trust. And no, it has not bitten us exactly in the past yet, although I've had a few minor issues with Google with their advertising and stuff, but that's a whole other topic that may come out at DEF CON. But it's just the potential. Like, okay, tell me what you think about this. This, I think, is, I don't know if I'll say evil, but it's conniving, certainly.
Okay.
You and I both know and agree that Google is tracking everything. All of your search words, the times, what sites you click through, et cetera, et cetera. We know they're keeping that, and it could be subpoenaed. And frankly, that's no different than any other site out there. But here's something that I noticed.
I agree with that, but I mean,
okay.
but that's not Google being evil. That's,
well,
that's
watch.
That's just fear of them being subpoenaed.
Well,
and I do admit, if Google has to say everything they know about you, that's probably a lot.
Well, watch. Let me finish. With Gmail now, I don't know if you've noticed this. I just mentioned it last week. I just noticed now that if you sign into your Gmail account, it used to be that Gmail was completely independent of Google.
Right.
If you look now, if you sign into Gmail and do not sign out, you actually stay logged in not only to gmail.com, but to google.com. And that history thing, that feature they added recently that tracks your history and lets you go back and redo your searches, and if you want to go back and look something up you searched for before, by itself, that sounds good and all, but they are tying these things together. I did not, at any point in time, authorize my Gmail account to be tied into my Google. I probably did in the fine print, let's be honest. Probably in their fine print it said they could do that, and being the non-user license agreement reader that I am, I probably clicked right through it. But I think that is certainly underhanded for them to now automatically log me into Google, and let's say I do a search for, I don't know, grandma porn or something embarrassing. I never logged out of Google, and now Google has logged that search and has that in a profile associated with my name and my Gmail account. I do think that is certainly underhanded that they did it without me logging into Google. They assume that I want to stay logged into all the Google services because I checked my Gmail once in the morning. That is underhanded to me. I do not like that tactic.
That's actually very interesting. I was not aware Google was doing that. I'll look at it.
Yeah, because they don't care.
But no, if it is true, yeah, I agreed. I mean, that certainly is a very discreet connecting of Gmail accounts to user searches.
So anyway, again, we went into this on the last show a lot, and we probably shouldn't rehash it again. But yes, I'm just worried that the potential is there because they have so much data. Like you said, they're just so big, so you have a natural bit of paranoia that comes with that. And I'm not a real paranoid person, and I haven't changed a whole lot the way I use Google. I do still use Google, so I'm not that big of a conspiracy. I'm just saying be careful. But my other big worry is I'm also, I guess I can say this safely, I'm anti-big business in general. I don't like monopolies, monopolistic companies. And when Google went public, that was a scary step for me. Because now you're answering to shareholders and people whose bottom line is money.
Right.
And they're going to start making decisions, and when Bren and when they say, no, we're not doing that because it's evil, the shareholders are going to say, yeah, you're going to do it because it's going to make us money, and we call the shots now. That
right.
potential scenario exists. It hasn't happened yet, and, you know, hopefully, I pray it never does happen, but the potential is there now, and it wasn't there, 9, 10 months ago before they went public.
That's true.
So these are just all my things. I'm just pointing them out. Again, I guess maybe I am coming across as a big conspiracy nut against Google, but I still use Google. I'm just telling people to be careful what you use Google for and start mixing your stuff up. I'm searching with Google and Yahoo and MSN Search. I still like Clusty, the clustering search engine. So just mix your stuff up. That's pretty much all I'm ever trying to say about the whole thing. So, man, another tangent we got off on there. Let's jump back into another email here from Axquan.
Axquan, I think. I think it's just a rhyme with Axon.
Okay. All right. Axquan says, hi, Stank Dog. First of all, I'd like to thank you for the great show. I've been listening to Binary Revolution Radio for almost a year now, but not till I had got to episode 58 with Decius, a mutual friend of ours, talking about memes, I had gotten the courage to send a letter to you. You've got all this great stuff on your show, and I just didn't have anything interesting to say to you. Well, I'm sure that's not true, but back to the main topic. I found Decius's meme talk extremely interesting. It's just fascinating to observe how a hacker can relate to the grounds of life and make something useful of it. Well, yeah, as a side note, gee, hackers are normal people, and we're smart, and we know other things besides computers. Big surprise. Anyway, whilst I was listening to the beginning of the show... Oh, did you see that? He used whilst. W-H-I-L-S-T. Whilst I was listening...
Oh, that is nice.
That is nice. Man, we have some very eloquent listeners on this show. Man, I'm impressed. Whilst I was listening to the beginning of the show, I didn't know a first thing about memes, but at the end, I've had a whole bunch of questions and ideas spinning through my head. I really would like you... to ask this question on the air so everyone could learn more about it. Okay, here we go with this. And you know what? I'm going to turn this over to you because I think you know a lot more about this than I do because, frankly, I learned most of it from Decius, and I think you probably have more experience. So let's see. First question. Okay, my first question is, how does a mime spread? I've understood the knock-knock jokes comparison, but I wonder how does it spread on a large scale? Imagine this. There's a drop of water falling onto a still lake. This drop is an information or a meme, and while it hits the water, the wave progression starts. And does the meme spreading through the society act like this wave? Does it go through the whole lake and then disappear, or does it bounce on the border and then get back to the sender? Or maybe it doesn't really reach to that point because humanity is so big. You want to stop, or do you
okay,
want...
Okay, yeah, I'll take this. Okay.
Or do you want to finish?
I would say first off that I think the water analogy is not very good.
Okay.
I mean, I guess it works okay, but I wouldn't recommend thinking that way. I think the really important thing to focus on is the connection between genes and memes. Like the name very obviously implies this. Of interest, if you're interested in more about memes, this concept was first introduced in Richard Dawkins' The Selfish Gene, and then it got like really big in Susan Blackmore's The Meme Machine. The main thing that makes memes interesting is that it was the first place where the idea of evolution was popularized outside the context of genes. And basically, evolution is more of a general purpose algorithm and can be applied basically anywhere. The evolution algorithm basically has three basic parts, and it doesn't really matter in what context you have these, you're always going to get some kind of evolutionary force. If you want to, you can write these down. Your three basic parts of Feig evolution are, number one, variation in the initial population, which in this case would just be the myriad of ideas out there in the world. Two, selection. So I guess in this case it'd be what you find believable. And then three, heredity and reproduction, in which case you just tell it to someone else. That's basically just memes in a nutshell right there. Like,
well,
you there's lots of ideas, you have some of them that you like, and you say, okay, you know, I'm selecting for these ideas and I'm going to go tell them to my friends and post them on my blog, and then your friends may repeat the process, and thus some ideas get spread more than others, and they can go to war and they can dominate with each other. Stank, did that make any sense?
Oh, absolutely. I think very, very good example of that. And let me go ahead and let's take his. He has a second question here that I think is a good follow up to that. And he says, my second thought was what impact it has on the personality of someone's infected. Like with this McDonald's song, do we go to the McDonald's restaurant because the meme altered our consciousness in some way, or do we do that because we were already familiar with the brand?
I would not use the word infected. Like, it implies it's like a bad thing. Like, you think of a meme as like many beneficial things. Like, you can think of people's scientific understanding of the world as a meme. So, like, we can think of actually Newtonian mechanics is a great example. Newtonian mechanics was there were many ideas out there for explaining like the movements of planets and stuff. Newton selected one that he liked. In this particular case, he had some good math to back it up, and then. He published it to other scientists said, oh, look, this is great, and now it's in the schools, and now this idea is reproducing itself. There are very many helpful ideas that spread through this exact same mechanism. To say infected implies it's bad, which isn't really a good idea.
Would this be accurate to say that maybe sometimes things like this get overanalyzed? Can it be simplified? I mean, what you're saying sounds very clear, quite honestly. It sounds very clear and very straightforward. Do you think maybe sometimes people are trying to overanalyze memetics and memes in general, talking about whether it gets polluted and why doesn't it reach here, and you mentioned earlier about how they can actually have like a survival fight when one meme collides with another, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, religious wars are a great example of this. I mean, I can go into more detail about that, but I mean, but basically, you have one self-reproducing meme versus another. Like, religion A says accept religion A or die. Religion B says accept religion B or die. And these two go at each other. And so there's some person saying, oh, should I choose religion A or religion B?
Right. Well, what about so if we were to take this to an extreme, does there come some point in the I don't know, meme war, for lack of a better word, where at the end of time there will be one meme that dominated all others and we're all like mindless...
one meme to rule them all?
Exactly, we're all mindless drones being brainwashed to the point where we...
probably not, because
by going science fiction right there.
Because very often in the in the Heredity, actually I probably should have said this. In the Heredity, there is an assumed mutation and variation. So like for example, if you tell the idea to someone else, they might get like a few parts wrong, or they might expand on it a little bit, or they might like understand it in a slightly different context. So thus the idea is they're changing ever so slightly when they reproduce. So the idea that it will ever reach a completely homogeneous steady state is basically impossible.
Very, very interesting stuff. I wish we actually had more time. Maybe we should do another show dedicated to memes in the future.
We can have me and Deathyus on here, and we can
about it. Oh, that would be phenomenal. That would be a great show. Actually, yeah, we'll talk about that later, actually. Anyway, let me finish out his email here. Let's see, where was I? Like I said before, I found this topic very interesting and opposite to my first impression, very related to hacking. I'll definitely research on that in the future. But now I would like to touch on something different. I think that what you don't realize is that your show has more value than it seems. Everyone says that it's funny and informative, and it is, but it also helps polishing my English. I'm from Poland, and I don't really have an opportunity to hear English in day-to-day use. Sure, I can listen to CNN or the BBC, but it's not the same. Think of that while you are cursing on the air.
Just think about it. Where else are you going to hear such a wonderful English word like whilst?
Well, whilst is good stuff, but see, I mix that in with all my foul language and vulgarity that slips out sometimes when I get on a rant about something.
You are propagating whilst to all of Poland.
I am spreading the vulgarity meme to other countries. That's my job here. Thank you very much. God bless. Good night. My work is done. I don't have enough pressure of trying to make a funny show and a technical-based show and, teaching hacking and stuff like that. I'm teaching the world how to cuss together in harmony, and it's kind of sad, really, when you sit back and think of it. I'm contributing to the downfall of society. That's all I'm doing here on the show. And he has one last line here that I think you might appreciate, too. It says, I've always wanted to say something about Acidus in episode 57, but I think I'll save that for another time. That's too bad, because...
A shame.
Yeah, I know that's your buddy there, Acidus. You and him have a little history
together.
We
have some history together.
Yep, some history together that we probably shouldn't or won't talk about tonight. So... Yeah, that was very good stuff. Let's move on. We're falling behind in email like we always do on the show. We have so many good listeners and good emails. Let's see, we have two more here. Let's do Old School writes in and says, Stank, after listening to episode 88 and thinking back to when you first started talking about offering AUG files, I decided to do my part. I have converted all Binary Revolution Radio files to AUG as well as added the episode number to the IDV tag. I have uploaded the first year to my server, www.remoteexploitation.com. That's remoteexploitation, all one word, .com. Take a listen and tell me if you would like me to upload the rest. And I did contact Old School and told him, by all means, go ahead and upload the rest of them. And thank you for doing this, Old School. But also, I had some other people volunteer to do this as well. So... I kept putting it off, telling everyone, you know, the whole lossy format to lossy format argument of, you know, you've got an MP3 file that's compressed and has lost a few bits, and when you convert it to another lossy format like AUG, then it's going to get even worse. But, so all this time, my excuse and what I've been saying was that I would rather just remaster it from my high-quality master files, my original DAT files and everything. But... I have to accept, just like the other thing I accepted, that I won't have the time to make an asterisk box. I have not had the time to do this conversion either. So, since Old School already did it, I'm saying go ahead. The bottom line is this is talk radio, which is generally very low quality anyway, and insert your own low quality joke there about the show. But generally, we recorded a very low bit rate, is probably a better term to use, and... whatever could possibly be lost in that lossy-to-lossy conversion is probably not that noticeable, quite honestly. Yes, it's going to happen. It's inevitable. They're two different algorithms, so there's going to be some loss. But you know what? I bet you people might not be able to notice the difference. Maybe in the opening and closing music you might notice it. But frankly, I've been putting it off so long that I think that this is probably the way to go. And if you don't know what I mean by lossy to lossy conversion, you can go back to episode 59. I actually looked that up with Jason Scott, was my co-host on the show, and we talked about audio compression, audio formats, and lossy versus lossless, and a lot of other interesting audio things as well. So go back and check that episode out if you're interested in that topic. So, yeah, I'm saying, you know what, it's time to get these AUGs out there. It's my fault for putting them off, trying to do too much myself. I should really back off sometimes and let people help out. And Old School, thank you for doing that. Again, if you are interested in the AUG Vorbis files of Binary Revolution Radio, he has Season 1 up, and maybe Season 2 by the time this airs, at remoteexploitation.com. So thank you, Old School, for that. And our last email this week comes from Elzair. Elzair says, "Dear Stank Dog and Virgil." Look at that. It says it right there.
Oh, how kind.
I know. I made that up. "Dear Stank Dog and Virgil, what's up in the... Nobody knew you were going to be... we've been trying to get... We've just had really weird scheduling conflicts trying to get you on the show. So I'm glad to have you on. Hopefully we'll get you on again soon. But... anyway, Dear Stank Dog and Virgil, what's up in the DDP hood? First, I would like to wish Decoder all the best, and I hope that he can be let off easily. The Mind War was a really neat show, and I would really like to hear his voice again. It sucks when a member of the community gets busted by the feds." Well, yeah, it does. Second, are you still looking for people to help with the hacktivism site you were planning? I wanted to mention this on the air because I had actually not heard of it before, and I think this project is definitely worth mentioning. Anyway, I would love to help out with it. Good luck and happy hacking. People who listen to the show regularly know that Decoder is in a troublesome situation right now. Virgil, I know you've been through a little bit of process like this with your situation, but that was more from a private company. Decoder's getting hassled from the feds, and for reasons that are totally, benign. So it's really a bad situation, and we have avoided talking about it on the show, and we're going to continue to avoid talking about it for the one reason that it's still ongoing. And when you're dealing with the feds, stirring up more trouble and making a big stink is making it worse on Decoder. So, I appreciate that everybody has been very respectful of that situation, and I do appreciate people have not pushed it and stirred up a lot of trouble. Let's let it play itself out. You've got to play their game for a little while, and we might have some news soon. Not good news, not bad news, but some news. And we will let people in when it is time. So please hold off just a little bit longer. And I do sincerely appreciate that people have kind of stayed away from this. But we will definitely have something to talk about in the next month or so. So as soon as I know something and feel that it's time to talk about it, we will definitely do that. Now, as far as the hacktivism site, which is very, very related to this, because this is where we would share information and try to help people from getting in this situation again. Quite frankly, the hacktivism site is yet another project that I take on, and it's just too much for me to carry. I don't have enough hours in the day to do everything. And it fell to the wayside. Just a lot of other projects kind of jumped ahead on the list, and Freak Factor came along, and presentations and conferences and whatnot. So this has kind of fallen aside. I do still want this to go forward. But I'll just be very blunt with this. I cannot do this project by myself. I have no time to maintain this, to contribute every single day, to babysit it, to watch it, to nurture it. To get a site up and running and successful, you have to spend time on it every day almost. Every single day. You've got to watch it. You've got to help it grow. You've got to make sure it stays, you know, in the direction that you want it, that it doesn't become chaotic, that everything's nice and clean, and it's a lot of maintenance that goes on. You've got to check in on it every day or two to make sure that it's still moving and still active. Kind of like that old thing about 2600 meetings. If somebody goes to the site and it hasn't been updated in 3 months, they're not going to go to the meeting. It looks like it's been abandoned. It looks dead. You have to keep updating it, show people that there's still interest and still activity.
Anyway, to make sure that you're Google, that you aren't getting Google refers for kiddie porn and stuff like that.
Exactly. I used to get that, and a lot of spammers.
That's great. I love those.
A lot of spammers will go in and just post replies to unrelated topics. You know what the big one is right now? 7-card stud poker, whatever it's called. 7-card Texas Hold'em poker sites. That's what all the spam I see is about now.
Actually, I'll tell you something. This is kind of an underhanded technique, but it's kind of interesting. If lots of bloggers watch their Google refers very, very religiously, if you spoof many, many Google refers to their websites, say about some certain topic, you can very often get them talking about this topic. And that's probably all I can say about that. But there are times when this has been done.
Sounds interesting. Sounds intriguing. Certainly. Well, as far as this activism site, I still wanted to go forward with this project. I set the site up. It's registered. It's running. I've installed a content management system on there that does everything that we want to do. I have customized it. The only thing left to do is, A, to work out the graphics for it, a little bit of layout design work, and secondly, start putting up content. And I think Virgil and I also agree on this, that this whole myth about, well, I won't say myth, but this whole preconception of what hacktivism is just gets on my last nerve. I just absolutely can't stand that when you say hacktivism, the first thing that people picture is anarchists and chaos theory and defacing web page in the name of some cause or something. I mean,
yes,
granted,
actually, there is something I want to comment on here. I'm looking at the notes here. The hacktivism is spelled hacktivism.
Right.
Death Veggie from Cult A Cow would be totally squirming, you know, whenever he sees that. I know Death Veggie was if not the first, certainly one of the first people to initially use the term, and it was initially spelled without the K. So it was just activism with an H at the beginning. I've noticed that more and more, even people in the media, they're putting emphasis on the hack rather than the activism. Well, I don't know. I'm not going to tell people how they should spell their words, but I think the emphasis there is very important.
Right, and actually, that's very much consistent with what we do on the show. Emphasis is on the hack. The emphasis is on the tech. So it's not really. I mean, I understand what you're saying, but also isn't there project the Hacktivismo? With an O at the end of it,
yes,
as well. So
I don't know if that's still going. Supposedly Peekabooty was supposed to be released at some point. I know there were some betas floating around,
right.
But as far as I know, that project is no longer active.
Yeah, I saw betas, and that's all I ever saw of that as well. But again, that I you know what it's that, and that's kind of one of the problems is there are a bunch of different definitions. People took it a step further and emphasis on the hack, and they were using it to deface websites and. That's exactly why I want to use this, and I want to take the word back, just like I want to take the definition of the word hacking back that the media has ruined. Now, I'm not foolish enough to think that it's going to happen in a short period of time because it's been abused for so long, but the same with this word. I don't want hacktivism to be tied to these punks, these people out there that are defacing websites because of some, quite frankly, I don't believe that there's a cause to it. I think it's just an excuse to be troublemakers. That's just my opinion, of course, and I've mentioned this on the air before, and I see a rise in attempted attacks on my server the next day. So, you know, do what you got to do, people, if you disagree with me. But you know what? What I want to do with the site, my goal for hacktivism is to prove that, you know what, we are hackers, and we are affected by a lot of these laws that you guys implement. General technology laws, these anti-terrorism things that catch us up in the loop. Oh, yeah, throw the baby out with the bathwater. Let's call all hackers out there a bunch of terrorists and label them with terrorists. Guess what? I'm not a terrorist. You know, I don't want to be associated with that. So, you know, basically what I want to do is when information like this, when the government's making decisions, when companies like their RIAA, et cetera, are going forward, taking these foolish actions and stuff, I want a site that can show the other side of the coin, to show another point of view. I realize the EFF is out there. I realize there's a lot of other sites, Uphill Battle. There's tons of them. But I want one, and it's exactly what you said earlier. I do want one that emphasizes the hack. I want one that is a site for hackers, by hackers, about how hackers are affected by these political decisions that are made. Now, this is not a political show, and I'm not going to go in any deeper than we already have, but that is my vision for the site. I want news items, I want laws that are being passed, acts that are being looked into, decisions that are being made. I want them to be, instead of going out and defacing a site, instead of crying, instead of standing up on a soapbox and pounding on the Bible and trying to convert it, I would rather stand back and say, you know what, we are some of the most intelligent people on the planet, myself excluded, of course. We are people with educations, we are hackers, we do things that other people cannot do. We think differently than everyone else. Why not put that to good use and let's educate people? And it may be naive, but you have to start somewhere. If we can break down some of these bills and do some analysis and point out problems with them and possibly offer solutions or different viewpoints, maybe somebody will actually be educated and listen, and maybe we can have some effect. Maybe we won't, but I bet you we will at least educate some people that visit the site, and maybe if we just touch one politician out there, make a small difference. That's all I want to do with the site. So, yes, if anyone is interested, email me directly about that, stankdog@stankdog.com. That's stankdog@stankdog.com, and we will talk about that. Now, let's see, how are we? We are, let's see here. We're going to have to, let's jump through the show and tell super fast and go straight to the main topic. How's that?
All right.
Because all I wanted to mention in the show and tell for myself is that I am working on putting together some information about BinRev meetings. A lot of people out there don't have a local 2600 meeting. A lot of people are, for whatever reason, one reason or another, they don't like their 2600 meeting or the attitudes or the egos or whatever the situation may be. And we've had people request and show interest in Binary Revolution meetings. I go to my 2600 meeting and my DEF CON meeting. So I'm basically, as far as I'm concerned, the more times you can meet with fellow hackers and work on things, the better. So I am working on putting together some information on starting Binary Revolution meetings. So as soon as I get that ready, I will announce it on the site. And looking ahead towards DEF CON. DEF CON is coming up the end of July, beginning of August. So we're just now going to start forming some plans and figuring out how long we're going to stay, where we're going to stay, things like that. And catching up on my reading a little bit in general, I'll just say it like this. There's two very good issues of Popular Science out right now. I just got done reading the May 2005, which was a very good issue, had some stuff of interest to hackers. There was an article actually on DEF CON in there, and basically it was emphasizing the war games, the capture the flag stuff, which was an interesting article. But also, in addition to that, it had a very long section on, I guess the term is smartphones, those PDA phones and the different operating systems and the features and the benefits and the pros and cons and things. So if you're into that kind of stuff, there was a very good article in that one. And in the current issue, as soon as I got done with that one, which is the new one just is coming out. I just got it in the mail, I think, day before yesterday, has a very good article on one of the few heroes that I actually have. I think I can say that he is a hero of mine. There is a very good article on Albert Einstein in there. And a lot of good information and a lot of interesting viewpoints and thoughts and what if Albert Einstein never existed? What if some of his theories and his findings never happened? So there's a very good article about that in there. So if either one of those interest you, first of all, I recommend subscribing to Popular Science anyway. It's a great magazine. It's less than a buck an issue. I'm not a commercial or anything for them. But even if you don't want to subscribe, you might want to go to the bookstore and pick these two particular issues up off the shelf if any of those sounded interesting to you. So, Virgil, what do you got?
Let's see. Most things I've been doing, I guess there are two things, really, and they're kind of related, and conveniently, they're kind of related to the main topic.
All right. Well, then we will segue.
The main thing I've been getting into is data mining, and this is a pretty general-purpose thing, but I don't know. I guess it really has two... Well, just to describe it a little bit, it has basically two parts, and they're pretty straightforward. The first one is massive data collection from huge numbers of sources, and then after you have this huge massive data, you then either A, pan for gold for the really exciting bits, or B, you do some sort of analysis, statistical or otherwise. And I don't know, there's lots of great trivia here that I suspect most of your listeners will enjoy. Some people who've done this in the past, when the Nazis took over France, they wanted to kill Jews very quickly because that was kind of in fashion at the time. So what they did was they raided all the big Jewish temples, and then they got all the little phone books of all the rabbis, and then they correlated all of them into a list, and they say, oh look, these are the people who are cited, you know, extremely frequently in all these rabbis' phone books. We should go get them first. And they did, and this was apparently a very successful technique. So I don't know. This just shows you kind of the unexpected ways in which these techniques can be employed.
Right, and that's like probably one of the earliest forms of data mining.
It's one of the most interesting ones, definitely, because there's no computers involved at all.
Right, absolutely. Pre-computer, I was getting ready to say that was before, obviously before Google, and well before computers ever came into the picture. So, yeah, that's a very interesting one. And I guess, yeah, let's segue right into our main topic.
Actually, no, there actually are a few more examples I want to give people that people may or may not know about.
Sure, go ahead.
I think they'll enjoy.
Some history, absolutely.
Okay. So some other interesting data mining things I don't know if they're too well known right now, is the Alexa toolbar. Most of us know about Alexa. Of interest, the Alexa spider is the same spider that powers archive.org. So, you know, that
right.
That's kind of interesting. But what I'm focusing on here is that the Alexa toolbar, which you get at Alexa.com, is actually spyware. And it shows you and it tells you which websites you've been visiting. It reports back to Alexa which ones which sites you've been looking at, and it correlates them. You can actually go to Alexa.com and you can see this site is more popular than this site, and people who visit this other site also visit these other sites and stuff like that. And this is an ability that you basically cannot. It's almost impossible to get any other way unless you're Google.
Right. Right. Well.
So that's kind of neat. Let's see. I don't know. I guess this is sort of obvious, but I guess everyone should always mention the NSA's Echelon system, where they scan emails and stuff like that, looking for flag words for analysis. So supposedly a few people have actually been caught by this. I recall seeing a few articles on, I think it was in Wired, like maybe a year or so back, where Echelon actually caught someone, which pretty surprised me. And this is sort of a subcategory of the data mining idea. I remember in Jello Biafra at Hope 2000, there was this very big the very important meme of the day was become the media, which has gotten very popular. Like even on Death Use's meme streams, you can see that around the front page.
Right.
I like to think the modern version of this is become the CIA, and there are many different websites that try and do this sort of open source intelligence thing.
Yeah.
Where you're basically mining all non-classified information, and you and your friends, you basically become an intelligence agency, and it's often surprising the things that you can know that the regular media does not.
Right, and that's why things like the Freedom of Information Act were just a godsend.
Oh yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. If a great example of this is Rust Kicks, the memoryhole.org. I don't know if I call him a walking intelligence agency, but he certainly does have a lot of interesting stuff that otherwise would not see the light of day.
Right, and I guess, you know, that goes along with another saying or another meme, if we're going to use those words today, and that is the whole watch the watchers.
Yes.
You know, watch the watchers, I think, is very appropriate. Watch them as they watch unto you. So that very much actually is a good, I guess, jumping off if we want to actually talk about Google mining, which ironically, being that I'm somewhat concerned about what Google's watching about me and what Google's looking into and tracking me doing, ironically, Google mining allows me to do the same thing back to them. Well, I'm not really doing... I guess that's not really true, because I'm not...
But you can see a lot of the same things they see.
Right, right. And actually, I haven't told you this yet really either, but I've been watching them. You can Google for sites on Google and information on Google, so just as easily as any other site.
Right.
So I have found some interesting information about Google on Google's own sites. So they slip up and make mistakes as well. Now, I'm not going to drop some of that on the show tonight, but I have found some interesting PDFs and internal information. Now, they're usually doesn't stay up for very long, but I have found it. But again, this comes back to what you said earlier, and you said there were, correct me if I'm wrong here, there's really two steps to this, if you can say that again. One is the collection of data, and step two is the subsequent analysis of said data.
Yeah, which is either like this big macroscopic thing that you say, oh, person B hangs out with person A, or you look for something like very special, which would probably be the case for NSA's echelon, where they're looking, where they're like billions of emails and they don't care about, you know, 99.99999% of them.
Right, and that's an example of a way that can that's an example that can be automated, looking for keywords, etc. Sometimes you do have to eyeball and manually go through some of the data and some of your results at the same time as well. So I think maybe we did a little bit of history and we gave a couple examples. I think maybe we should back up and do a couple quick definitions. We got like maybe 10-15 minutes left here. Time flying like it always does on the show. A couple definitions, actually. And okay, what we talked about really has been data mining in general. And what Google mining is data mining applied to Google. Google has this huge, huge amount of information. They've cached, you know, so however many million, whatever it says on the front page, it tells you how many pages they've indexed. They have this huge amount of information. So that's half the battle. Half the work is done for you. They've gone out and they've built this giant data warehouse, for lack of a better word. And actually, that's one of the terms. Data mining usually goes hand in hand with the term data warehousing. Not really in the case of Google mining. Data warehousing usually refers to transaction-based systems. And I had written an article for 2600 quite a while back about transaction-based systems. But transaction systems, and the best example of this is credit card companies. And Amazon.com is the biggest example of anybody. And it's very similar, you described it earlier, as where they're tracking like trends to see people from this area also bought this. People that ordered this item also ordered these items. And by looking at the transactions, you're not necessarily looking at the history of all the items in an items database, and then a user database and all these separate ones, you're watching the individual transaction. What other items did they view? What else did they add to their cart but then not buy? All of these things on a transaction user-by-user basis are warehoused. And then data mining generally, in a business sense, refers to then analyzing that for trends and patterns. And again, Amazon's a great example because that's how they always tell you, people in your area also bought this. People who bought this DVD movie also bought this DVD movie. If you like that book, you'll also like this book. That's how Amazon does it. Amazon is like the biggest company that really, really does that. And credit card companies do it as well for a little bit more nefarious purposes for advertising. They try to find trends in what you buy and what stores you shop at. and they data mine that and sell that list of data mined custom targeted marketing to different companies. If they find that you do a lot of shopping at Circuit City, for example, they'll send that you in a database over to Best Buy to try to steal you away as a customer and make you go over there. They'll send you sell your information to Best Buy. Best Buy will then send you advertising trying to steal you away as a customer, for example. So that's generally in a business environment what data warehousing and data mining is used for. But again, it's not exactly what we're doing with Google mining. Am I correct? Is that correct?
Usually with Google mining, we're doing the other analysis where you're basically panning for gold. Like most of the data, the majority of the stuff Google has isn't terribly interesting, but by using some clever parameters, you can go down to the really nice bits quickly.
Right, and when you say clever parameters, there is absolutely a relationship between the traditional term, quote, Google hacking, end quote.
Definitely.
So Google hacking is not necessarily equal to Google mining. Google mining is that Google has done the data collection. You are going to do the analysis of that data. And if you need to use Google hacking techniques to do it, so be it. But that's kind of the process. And I know that you even take this a step further, and this is something I would like you to talk about a little bit. And that is, let me say, one of the examples I made up in the forums to try to get people interested in this is the Bell South project. And it's a very simple and a very basic project for data for Google mining. Go out there and find as much stuff as you can about Bell South. Let's gather it. Let's get it together. Because it's doing a little bit, it's not quite doing the analysis yet. It's just mostly siphoning out all, like you said, Google's got all this garbage. A lot of it's uninteresting. Let's get the interesting part for at least this particular project. Let's get a bunch of stuff from Bell South. Download all the PDFs you can find, graphics you can find, document files, spreadsheets, whatever. Let's gather them all in a central location. Stage two is the analysis part, which is what you do a lot of, and you showed some examples of this in your Interzone presentation, and that is, for example, writing scripts or there are scripts out there already you might find, for example, to look through metadata of Office things, that kind of stuff. And what is some of the stuff that you have found or some good stories? I know you mentioned some at Interzone. And maybe let's mention, why don't you mention your site first of all, where people can download your.
Oh, okay. Well, let's see. The data mining presentation at Interzone. You can download that off my site at romanpoet.org. It's linked right off the front page. It's pretty straightforward. Let's see. Oh, as far as in interesting things that were found, most of the sort of work that I've been doing, I probably can't talk about things I personally have found. However, I can tell you some other related projects and sorts and some of the stuff that they found that were interesting. For example, actually, one of my favorite ones was analyzing Microsoft Word documents released from the Blair government in the UK, and it was found that by analyzing the revision log of the Microsoft Word document, you were able to show that it was plagiarized. And not only were you sure it was plagiarized, you were able to show that who edited what bits here and who changed what words here and there, and this was very interesting. It's like, for example, you could find out if which government official changed the word freedom fighter to terrorist and stuff like that. This entire thing is covered on computerbytesman.com. I think his name was Richard Smith, I think, the person who did all this analysis.
All right, and that's a great example. And how embarrassing. How incredibly embarrassing. And that's just, any of the Office documents, I'm sure, are ripe with that kind of information. As a matter of fact, if I remember correctly, Virgil, I think I remember sending you some very interesting metadata from your little incident. I don't know if we're allowed to talk about that. Do you remember that?
Yes,
I think
do.
I found something very similar in the very that I sent to you all back when your case was going on. That I don't know if it helped or did anything, but that's exactly what I did, exactly what happened. I didn't call it or have any idea of the concept of data mining at the time. But it is kind of a neat application, kind of a funny story, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not only Office documents that you can find this kind of stuff in. Office just is well known for keeping a lot of metadata, tracking the last, I think it's 10 by default, 10,
yeah, 10.
Changes that were made, revisions, I think is the term they use. But it also keeps a lot of other stuff, author names. If you turn on
changes function.
Yeah, what's the term? Collaborative functions. That's what I was looking for. The collaboration tools and whatnot. Then yeah, it has a lot of functions in there that could also have that information. So that's the kind of stuff that's the kind of things you'll find out when you start doing the analysis phase of things. So phase one again, and let's just go back to the Bell South project because it's a very simple example. It is collecting a bunch of data, whatever that data happens to be. And I don't know if you've had time to look at our Bell South, but there were some other surprising things that I wasn't expecting to see. Like I think Natus and some other people also found some scripts, some shell scripts with plain text passwords and usernames on them. I didn't expect some stuff to be that...
For Bell South.
For Bell South, yeah. And I didn't expect something to be that much out in the open, but it certainly was. So that was kind of funny that you find something interesting in the actual collection part of the process just by kind of checking and nosing around, doing some Google hacking. So the second phase is once we get a lot of this interesting stuff from Bell South, then it's doing the analysis and collecting it. And I know, and I don't want to put you on the spot, I don't know if you know them offhand, but I think you mentioned some tools. Aren't there tools that will parse through, for example, metadata from Microsoft Word documents and pull it out and put it into a database?
There are some basic tools. There is no definitive God tool, mm-hmm. But there are a few basic things. But I don't know. I don't want to emphasize the metadata element. I must admit, the metadata was one of the more fun things that you can mine for in a big collection of documents, because usually it's something people don't know is online. But usually you don't even have to do that. I mean, let's see. Oh, well, a classic example. Like if you downloaded like every file ending in .sh from bellsouth.net, and then just grep password. I mean, you might find something.
Exactly.
I mean, it's surprising what you can find.
Great. Yeah, absolutely. A great example. And didn't you also tell us about one where the PDF file? My terminology is probably way off here, so correct me. But something about things were blocked out, like censored out.
Oh yes.
But
well, I don't know. That's not really data mining, but it is interesting. I don't know. Occasionally, like this is most common in the Freedom of Information Act request. Very often, the PDF documents will be blotted out, and like there'll be like little black rectangles over the good bits. Contrary to popular belief, the PDF is actually a multi-layered document. So underneath that black rectangle, the text is still there. So if you understand a little bit about the PDF format, you can automatically remove those black squares or replace all black squares with yellow highlighting and stuff like that.
Which is great. The highlighting is funny. And one more example is the EXIF information. I understand you don't want to focus on the metadata, but they're always similar, like the EXIF information in image files and whatnot. And who was it, the girl from Tech TV?
Okay, Kat Schwartz.
Yeah.
Yes, if you do if you just do a Google for Kat Schwartz, everything becomes pretty clear.
Yeah.
Basically, she's one of the Tech TV eye candy babes. And due to some metadata in the JPEG, and the way JPEG is done in Photoshop, you're able to get some very nice nudie pictures that were not intended to be online.
Yeah.
And there was much rejoicing on the internet.
Yeah, very much so. Of course, I don't get Tech TV, so to me it was just another naked chick. But whatever, you know. All right. Well, again. Like Virgil was saying, it's not all about the metadata at all. It's about collecting it and looking for patterns of any kind. They could be as simple as maybe you'll notice that from 2000 to 2003, they were using a lot of Microsoft Word documents, and then all of a sudden in 2004, they switched to OpenOffice.
PDF.
Something as simple as that is very interesting and can tell you a lot about the company and what they're choosing.
Actually, of interest, the Blair government no longer publishes .docs, if you look.
Hmm.
Well, they do. I guess, like right after this incident, they no longer publish things in .doc format.
Now, see, there you go. It's interesting. They learned their lesson, I guess.
Apparently.
All right. Well, we're gonna wrap it up here. We got a couple minutes here, a few minutes. If there's anything you wanted to talk about, because I know the other thing is I'm trying to make like very simple projects, and I know you go a little bit more in depth than I do, quite honestly. And I know that your targets that you find interesting are a little bit different than the stuff I am. I'm kind of looking for more things like passwords and stuff as far as the way I'm applying Google mining. And you've got a lot more interesting, you're finding a lot more surprising data. I'm finding a lot more funny data. But you're doing like some detailed statistical analysis. I don't know if you want to mention this on the air. I have it in the show notes there. But your other published project that you did recently.
Oh, yeah, I can talk about that.
I didn't know.
Let's see. There was something I did pretty recently. Well, we all know about public records, and public records are slowly being put online. I did an analysis basically using only shell script and a little awk and a little sed here and there. To derive mother's maiden names by using a combination of birth records and marriage records, and I did this across the entire state of Texas by combining state level marriage records and birth records from the counties and birth records from various other places, mostly genealogy sites, and I ended up being able to derive with almost 100% certainty mother's maiden names for about 4 million Texans. It was very pleasant.
Yeah, that's really amazing stuff, man. That's really kudos, because that is definitely something that took time and research and some analysis, and that information is also on Roman Poet.
Yes. You can read the full paper. I actually should be publishing the data sets I used probably within the next few weeks as well. So if you want to see the data sets that I used to compute all this, you can get that pretty shortly as well.
I have to hesitate at the front page for a second anyway and look at the chick with the Mac.
Yes. She's always nice.
I love that picture. Oh, man, that's great. So that's our segue to end the show there. We'll close out on the hot chick picture, I guess. And head into our site of the week. And actually, I think you had a site for this week, right?
Yes, there is site of week. This is along the same theme of the become the CIA theme. There's one particular site that I think is probably doing the most interesting work of this nature. And this is nndb.com. Just nndb.com. And it says on the front page, NNDB is an intelligence aggregator that tracks the activities of people that we have determined to be noteworthy. Mm-hmm. Superficially, it seems like a who's database where persons' curriculum vitae is available. But mostly it exists to document the connections between people, many which are not always obvious. A person's otherwise inexplicable behavior is often understood by examining the crowd a person has been hanging out with. And that's basically the whole thesis. The idea is that it spies on famous people, and it determines who their friends are and who they contribute to. And you can see all that right for the taking. Mm-hmm. I think this is probably one of the classic examples of open source intelligence and taking the CIA into your own hands, I guess. Or just taking the job of the CIA into your own hands.
Right, and that's nndb.com, and I have been there myself, and I've seen a couple interesting things, some surprising. I didn't know they were friends, or I didn't know they had anything in common or any relationship, so that is a good site. Shouts for this week. I'll go ahead and give you a second to think if there's any shouts. My shouts go to DC404, something probably close to you there. Shouts to Tabiz and to Natus and to Cypher X, who's been helping me out with a lot of stuff lately, just some graphics, and also Natus as well. Like I said, Natus is doing a lot of cool stuff and working on some projects. So and he's doing a great job, of course, with Old School Freak. Site's been up and running very well for a while. So shouts to them. And how about you?
To Greg and Strick at Yak, please.
Greg Enstrick at yak.net, right? Or yak.org.
Yes.
Yak.net. Go check that out. If you want to email us about anything on the show, to yell at us, disagree with us, add to us, give us more information, the email address is radio@benrev.com. Our closing music this week is from Pete Miser, and it's called Scent of a Robot. And I actually came across this because I found a video of it and liked the song, went out and found the song. It is Scent of a Robot. I think this is one of the cooler songs I've heard in a long time, very unique lyrically. So check this out. And Virgil, thank you for being on the show. And I do sincerely want to try to get you on another show as soon as we can work something out. I know our schedules are kind of tough sometimes, but definitely want to try to get you on the show. Maybe we will go into another show about memes.
That sounds good to me.
Great. Well, thank you again for being on it. And I think we're going to close it up this week and tell everybody that we will see them again next week. Same hack time.
Same hack channel.
More human than human, I can do it all. French kiss, smoke a spliff, give a shit about baseball. I come home at night to my robot wife, drink a light beer and watch me a DVD. I look good, you can't even tell, they have me fooled. Implanted memories of puberty and preschool. Girls that broke my heart, had dark nights in the summer, just a string of primary numbers. Didn't bother me none before I knew I'm a slave, it's okay, I got things to do. But then I'm sitting there at work when my email blinks, and it's from the big boss, but it wasn't for me. It's just another memo about our robot line. See, it's that schematic detail on a robot mind, and I find that when I look close, all I see is a blueprint to manufacture me. I'm a robot, programmed not to know that I'm a robot, but some dumb fuck emailed me the computer code that makes up my soul. Now I'm running around trying to forget what I know. I'm a robot, programmed not to know that I'm a robot, but some dumb fuck emailed me the computer code that makes up my soul. Now I'm running around trying to forget what I know. A little bit hurt. How many people at work know what I just found out? Round about noon, my boss calls. Wants to see me in his office, but I stall for as long as I can. But the man comes down on my floor before I throw a tantrum. I can't run, so I sit there with his hand on my shoulder saying,
listen, Pete, you've been a real soldier.
Said he was sorry that I saw that email, and he was hoping that I wouldn't quit the firm. He told me that I was a joy to work with, and Brown knows me so hard I started to squirm. Concerned looks on the faces of the people I work with, and lots of small talk with the robot issue skirted. Made me nervous, so I rolled up and I asked my boss if I could have the afternoon off. I'm a robot, programmed not to know that I'm a robot, but some dumb fuck emailed me the computer code that makes up my soul. Now I'm running around trying to forget what I know. I'm a robot, programmed not to know that I'm a robot, but some dumb fuck emailed me the computer code that makes up my soul. Now I'm running around trying to forget what I know. Cats guessing and wondering what's next. For me, it was a Friday, so I stayed away from the office for the whole stinking weekend. My dark mood deepened into a dull depression, leaving me with even more damn questions. Like, what the hell do I tell my robot kids? And how long does a healthy robot live? And how did I make it through the airport x-ray? Or was that one of those fake memories? It ain't easy knowing the truth, I'm blowing a fuse. My soul feels funny like there's a hole in my shoe. I need a moment or two, let me go over the clues. I drank a case of Bud Light, it's still sober and new. I got a few things to do and even more to put in order. Walking through the kitchen tripping, there's my wife and baby daughter. And they can see by the look on my face. So I sit them down and tell them I've got something to say. Honey?
Yeah?
Snookum?
What?
You're not gonna like this.
What did you do this time?
I'm a robot, programmed not to know that I'm a robot, but some dumb fuck emailed me the computer code that makes up my soul. Now I'm running around trying to forget what I know. I'm a robot, programmed not to know that I'm a robot, but some dumb fuck emailed me the computer code that makes up my soul. Now I'm running around trying to forget what I know. I'm a robot, programmed not to know that I'm a robot, but some dumb fuck emailed me the computer code that makes up my soul. Now I'm running around trying to forget what I know. I'm a robot, programmed not to know that I'm a robot, but some dumb fuck my soul. Now I'm running around trying to forget what I know.
That's the biggest thing I want to impress upon you. We want you here. We need you here. So just take some time off. Take the day off. Take the week off. And just sleep on it and think about it. And come back fresh on Monday. And I know your aunt will be. I want to stay. I'm happy here. And that's what we want. We